Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Turn up your volume. Because you're about to listen to The Sick Podcast. The Sick Podcast. With Tony Marinaro.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast. Sports entertainment like no other.
Rejoint, on lui fait perdre la rondelle, une passe devant. Et c'est la bonne équipe, ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Stanley pour les Canadiens, le 23e de l'histoire.
You found the dogs! John, you found the dogs! He found the dogs!
And all together, they worked a young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup!
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. LaBee.TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination. It's gonna be sick.
Matt O'Hayen with you on this Friday evening. As usual, I wasn't with you last week. Tony stole my spotlight because we had a charity event, but it's okay. I'm back. He'll be stealing my spotlight again next week because I'm going to be in Nashville for one of my friends' bachelor parties. But enough about that. NHL playoffs in full swing. Not much news to report around the Canadiens, but this is a Canadiens podcast, so we will be talking Canadiens. Don't you worry. But first, you know what we should do. We should take care of some business, and we will dive into everything. Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Energy Transportation Group is a leading full-service logistics provider serving all of North America, driven to be different. We're also brought to you by Playground. With over 30,000 square feet of new gaming, dining, and entertainment space, it's time to reacquaint yourself with Playground. World-class sushi, AAA steaks, live shows, a brand new poker floor, and so much more. Located just over the Mercier Bridge, only minutes away from downtown Montreal, Playground. Experience the strip without the trip. And we're brought to you by La Bête TB beer, brewed in Quebec and a winner of a dozen international awards. La Bête TB offers quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients for everyone's taste. La Bête TB, embrace your true nature. And finally, you know all insurance isn't created equal, and you know where to find the right solution for you. Accent Insurance. Accent doesn't sell insurance, they shop insurance for you to find the right product, right on the money, whatever your insurance needs, home, auto, or business. Call the Accent team today at 514-363-3636 and get the right solution at the right price. Visit their website at accentassurance.com. Okay, like we said, the NHL playoffs are in full swing. The Canadiens cleaned out their closets or their lockers or whatever earlier this week. And yeah, we're going to talk playoffs. We're going to talk hockey. That's what we do. You know, it's NFL draft season, as you see, as I'm wearing my Bengals sweater. Amarius Mims, God willing, you will be a hit on offensive line picks, start of hits on offensive line picks for the Bengals, because we're not so good in that area. But enough about that. Okay, let's welcome in our guest. He is from the Montreal Gazette. He is Stu Cowan. Stu, how are we doing?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Let me ask you, are you a good packer whenever you used to go on the road, or if you still go on the road?
I packed light. I never checked the bag. I lost the bags too many times, and I could cram everything I needed into a little carry-on and a knapsack. And if it didn't fit, I didn't bring it.
So I'm the same way. I mean more, do you, like, you don't forget anything, or are you?
No,
or
I'm pretty, because
I'm a last minute
guy.
I did it
enough times that I sort of had a checklist. I mean, there's the odd time you might forget something. Usually it's the phone charger or something like that. You can pick one of those up at the airport. So I'm usually, I got pretty good as time went on.
Yeah, I know. It's just, I'm already thinking about my, this bachelor party I'm going to next week in Nashville. And I just
fun.
Know.
Nashville won't be any fun.
No. Like, hey, listen, we bought tickets to game 6 of Vancouver and the Predators. Oh. I'm crossing my fingers that this goes there. Cause you know, it only costed us about an additional $150 each, because they already, the organizer of the bachelor party, they already collected all the money. And I said, you know, there's some guys in the group, they don't care for hockey. But I said, I mean, Nashville Predators game 6 or $150, give me the game 6. I don't want the money back.
Fantastic atmosphere in that arena. You'll love it. And right across the street is Tootsie's, the bars. It's great. That whole city's fantastic. It's got Broadway Street and all the bars, and at the end of the street is the rink. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited. I really hope that Vancouver, I don't know, with Thatcher Demko out, they don't look too good, but I hope they could squeeze one more out and that series could get pushed to 6. But before we dive into the playoffs as a whole, let's talk Canadians. As we usually do, you know, we at the beginning of the season, we set expectations. Midway through, we kind of give a report card, the midterm report, and then at the end of the season, we also like to give our grades. We're not going to do this for the whole roster. We're only going to do it for a handful of players. But curious to know your grade for the entire this is for the season in its entirety for each of these players. We'll start with obviously the captain, Nick Suzuki.
Yeah, I think Nick Suzuki, you've got to give him an A. I mean, he's got the C on his sweater, but he did everything. I don't know what more you could have asked for him. Played every single game again. Best season he's ever had in points, really improved in the faceoff circle. His leadership in the room has developed. It's got to be an A. I mean, he really just had a fantastic season from start to finish. Playing against other teams' top line every night. We saw what he did with his line mates. We saw Cole Caulfield at the end of the season come on. Slavkovsky, you know, was Nick apparently went to Marty St. Louis in November when Slavkovsky was struggling and said, you know, can you put him on my line? I can help him out. And he certainly did. So definitely an A for Nick Suzuki.
You know, the great thing about Nick Suzuki was this season was that really a couple games here and there, but he was mostly pretty consistent, you know, because last year I remember there was a stretch in the season. He still ended with 60 odd points, which considering the team he was playing on was great. But there was a stretch in that season of about 20 or so games where he had about maybe 5 points. And this was in a row, and people were starting to get on his back a little bit. And he didn't really have that this year. No. Kind of consistent the whole way through, which really bodes well for the future of the team, considering they're going to, at some point, you hope, get an injection of talent in the roster. So I'm going to agree with you. Because he was consistent, he gets a solid A. Not an A+, but... if you want to go off of Concordia's grade scale, but we're going to go off of McGill's. So we're just going to give him the A, the best mark you can get. So let's go next to Cole Caulfield.
Yeah. Cole Caulfield. I'm going to give him, that's a tough, I'm going to say, I guess a C, because I mean, he did come on strong at the end of the year, but coming into the season, people were, you know, C, B minus, I'm going to say C, coming into the season, people were expecting minimum 30 goals, right? I think when we talked at the beginning of the year, they're paying him all that money to score goals. I know he did improve in other aspects of the game, defensively and whatnot. So I'm going to say a C. He's like, he was, for Cole Caulfield, he was okay this year. Like, you know, they need more out of him moving forward, especially on a team that struggles to score goals, especially from the forward position. They need more of him, more offense from him moving forward. The good sign was at the end of the season, I think he had about 8 goals in the last 9 games, something like that. So he found his touch again, which I imagine we'll see if we can carry it over into next season. When we asked him after the season about his shoulder, if that was a reason why, and he said the shoulder felt fine from the beginning of the year, but he's sort of getting used to it, right? It's in the back of your mind still that the shoulder coming off it. So I'm going to say a C.
Yeah, I'm going to say C plus. Mm-hmm. Just again, for, you know, all the reasons you stated, but I really, there's two things. One, it's the strong finish adds to the C plus. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like in my grade scheme here, he was one mark away from being at a B minus. Mm-hmm. One thing that really contributes to that C plus in a positive way is playing 82 games. You know, that's that was huge for him. And I think for a lot of Canadians fans that had those concerns after he signed that contract with the shoulder concerns. So could the season have been better? Sure. Would we flip his grade around if we flipped his assist numbers with his goal numbers? You know,
probably. I mean, and Marty St. Louis mentioned that this year. He said if you flip the numbers around, nobody would be complaining. But again, they're paying him all that money to score. You know, they're paying him to score goals. And the fact that Slavkovsky started scoring more at the end of the season, I think will help Caulfield moving forward. I imagine that line is going to stay together because it used to be like a sort of key on Caulfield because they knew that's where Suzuki was going with the puck and that Caulfield was the guy who was going to score in that line. Now he's got two wingers that can score, so it's going to help all three of them.
There you go. So that leads into the last forward we're going to talk about, which would be that of Juraj Slavkovsky. We said it at the beginning of the year, 40 points, 15 goals. That's a successful season. You got to give it to him. Did he reach the 20-30 mark?
Yeah, 20 goals, right? 30 assists. Yeah, I got 20 goals.
Yeah, so he reached the 250,000
bonus for that 20th goal too.
Yeah, so 20-30, you know, 50 points, 20 goals. The progression is so clear. You know, even when he wasn't putting up points in some games, he had a dominant presence on the ice, and that's what you really want to see. And you got to think, like everyone's saying, all the scouts out there, all the analysts, all the journalists, you're scratching the surface. He's really just scratching the surface right now with Juraj Slavkovsky in his potential. You got to give him an A.
I'm going to give him a B only because he really struggled early in the season. And I think an A would be, you know, 25 to 30 goals, maybe. Factoring in so many things with, you know, with Caulfield, you look at Caulfield had 8 goals and 15 more points than Slavkovsky, and he's getting a C, and Slavkovsky's getting a B. I think with everything in the NHL, you have to factor in the salary cap. And, you know, for a 20-year-old kid, I thought Slavkovsky had a really good season. Was it an A? I don't think so, just because of the final part of the season, without a doubt, the last 30 games or so, not a doubt, it was an A. But overall, I'm going to give him a B. I think he, before the season, we had said if he was going to score 20 goals, we said that would be a really good season for a guy who just turned 20 years old. And the future is certainly looking bright for him moving forward. There'll be more pressure on him too, right? He's going to be expected to score 25 to 30 next year, right? 20 this season would have been good. But I think he's a solid B. I think he just his continual improvement and progression. But, you know, he had a rough start. I mean, I remember writing a column, and this was mid-November, late November, that, you know, they should send him to the AHL. He's just not ready to play in the NHL. They didn't. They stuck with him. It proved to be the right move. He's progressed really, really well. But I'm going to stick with a solid B for him.
And I think that's fair. You bring up a good point, with calling him what we said, that Caulfield gets a C plus or a B minus. And, he had more points and goals than Slavkovsky. It's fair. I just see it in a way of, expectation. Not everyone is not everyone's going to be graded equally. Mm-hmm. On the same level playing field, because you expect more from certain guys. That's, Slavkovsky.
Everything in the NHL goes around the salary cap, including, I think, when you're grading guys. You got to get bang for the buck, mm-hmm. right? You got to get bang for the buck in a salary cap world, or you're not going to win.
And as they say in university, B is a three. So B is a three, 3.0 GPA is not bad. All right. So last player, or we could fit in a couple more if we want. But last one that I had jotted down was Mike Matheson. I'm interested to get your take on this one.
I'm going to give him an A. I mean, I know some people were critical of his defensive play, but he's on a team where there's not enough forwards who can generate offense. And he's counted on heavily to provide offense. I finished third in scoring behind Suzuki and Caulfield on the team, career season in goals and assists, logged crazy minutes of ice time. And when you have a guy who logging that many minutes of ice time, the style he plays, yeah, he's going to make defensive mistakes. We saw the same thing with PK Subban when he was here. You know, any player, any offensive minded defenseman, Cale Makar, those guys are going to give the puck away because they're trying things that other guys can't or won't try. And Matson had a great quote. We were talking to him when they were cleaning out their lockers last week, and he said, you know, if every defenseman just fired the puck off the glass and got it out, we'd never win a game. You know, you need certain players who can take risks, and there's certain players with high skill levels like Matheson, his skating ability and his vision and shot, everything he's got. You want him to take risks, especially on this team. And he took a lot, and he was consistent all year. Again, another guy who's had some injury issues in the past, played all 82 games this season. I think he was just a really dominant player, a really important player for this team. And I'm going to give him an A. Some people might argue with that, or just because of the defensive thing. People, we were talking about him at the end of the season also, and he said, you know, he tries to stay off social media as much as possible, but you hear a thing from family members and that, and he hears the sort of negative thing. And that's when he brought up the quote, you know, if every guy just shot the puck off the glass, we'd never win a game. He's a guy that the Canes want to take risk. He does. And, you know, we're asking about that also. I said, you know, do you think that Marty Saint-Germain put a tighter leash on you next season or moving forward when they have more forwards, hopefully, who can score and they won't rely on him as much? And he said, I don't know. He says, I'm not taking risks just for the sake of taking risk. You see the play, you make your decision whether you're going to go for it or not going to go for it. Sometimes you make the wrong decision and you learn from that moving forward. But I just think he was really, really solid. Key leader on the team also, helps in a leadership role with Nick Suzuki. So I'm going to give him an A.
This might rub some fans the wrong way, because I agree. I'm going to give him an A minus. Just a little more. I'm just a little more on the critical side of his defensive play, but you can't argue with the offense that he provided. What I'm interested to see is that leash and how it tightens next year, because it's the one thing I really admire about Mike Matheson more than anything in his risk taking is that he commits. You'll never see him get caught in no man's land, kind of putting his arms up. And if it was the wrong play, and if it wasn't a good risk, and it didn't pay dividends, well, he'll own up to it. He's very frank about it. He knows what he's talking about.
He's a classy individual, yeah.
So I like that. I like that. And I want to see, you know, I've said it. There's too many defensemen on the Canadiens, or at least there were too many defensemen on the Canadiens last season, where it was the age-old adage of, if you're not saying their name, they're doing a good job. You need some that you're going to say. We said, like you just said, we said PK's name all the time, you know, for better.
And people criticize him too for being bad defensively or coughing up the puck. You got the puck on your stick a lot. The more you have the puck, and PK was in a similar situation too, where he didn't have a lot of help up front at that time with that team. I mean, scoring from the forward position has been a problem for this Canadiens team forever, it seems. So when you have an offensive-minded defenseman, you got to give him some leash to generate some offense. And Mike Matheson did that this year.
And I just, again, I just love the fact that he commits to these plays.
Well, that highlight reel goal he scored this year, the end-to-end rush, the sort of Bobby Orr type goal, is exactly what you're talking about. Because you could see him, he sort of came up and he realized that they weren't really pressuring him too hard. And he went, okay. And he just put his head down and he took off. And they couldn't stop him. By the time they realized he was going, it was too late. And that's exactly what you're mentioning, but he doesn't hesitate when he sees an opening. If he thinks the risk's worth it, he goes for it.
Exactly. And you know what, if that's coming from the coaching staff, then good on them, because they need players to take more risks, because you're not going to win. It's not even just defensemen. You know, if forwards don't take risks, you're not going to win. You can't just always be making the safe play.
And we've seen Canadian teams in the past where the defensemen really weren't allowed to carry the puck much past the red line, right? Or where they weren't allowed to pinch in on the blue line and the offensive end to keep the puck in the offensive zone. And that resulted in boring hockey to watch, for one, and a team that really struggled to provide offense. And moving forward, I mean, if the Canadiens don't find more forwards who can score goals, this rebuild's not going to work. I mean, you can't just keep relying on Mike Matheson. You don't want Mike Matheson to have to do what he did this season, two seasons from now, right? You want to maybe, as I say, maybe you do tighten the leash on him a little bit. And maybe he realizes then he doesn't have to take as many risks. He can move the puck up to a couple of other forwards who can actually score themselves without him having to create so much of the offense.
You know, those are, to me, those three guys, Suzuki, Slafkovský, and Matheson, that really they would get the highest grades, which those are the ones, that's why I purposely mentioned them. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're the straw that stirs the drink on this team at this point. Same thing with Caulfield, who didn't get as high of a grade. But, you know, after that, it just goes, the reason why we're not going to go through everyone, and we are just going to talk about the playoffs the rest of the way for our listeners, is that there's no point in us ragging on Josh Anderson. We know what grade he would get.
He said, I sucked. You know, he took full ownership of it when we met with him at the end of the season. He said, I sucked. And he really did. I mean, he did. There's no doubt about it. He was horrible this year. He was invisible on too many nights. I mean, if we're great, it's obviously an F, right? And he might even give himself an F minus.
That's it.
He owned up to it. It's really hard to figure out what happened with him this year. He hinted, you know, he says that there's things that happen on the ice and off the ice. Like, you don't know if there's family issues or whatever is going on, but he was horrible. He sucked and he owned up to it.
And it's always nice to hear players say that. You know, you think of Roberto Luongo, who was the first, like, really of my generation, like, my contract sucks.
Yeah.
You know, to come out and say that, it's honorable. And
he didn't offer to give it back, though.
No. I mean, hey, would you? Yeah. Would you?
No, of course not.
Well, that's it. So, I mean, the thing is, again, with the Canadians, we've been saying it forever, is they just need an injection of talent into the roster. Mm-hmm. Because if we're going to grade each player based off of expectations, sure, a lot of them could get a B minus as the lowest grade you would see for the most part. But if you're going to grade them objectively, comparing them to their peers, there's not many A players for the Canadians, and that's what we're going to see happen. You know, whoever knows when I don't even think they set a date for the draft lottery yet, but whenever that happens, we'll get a clear picture of a prospect coming in. Maybe, hopefully for the Canadians, it's first or second and they're NHL ready. We have producer Shane in my ear saying May 7th. Is the draft lottery. So
Kent Hughes knows. I mean, Kent Hughes said it at his end of season news conference. He knows they need to get skilled players up front. Like, he has to. He realizes that he has to do that. He realized this rebuild is not going to work if they don't find more forwards who can score. It's going to be interesting to see how he goes about it. I think he's going to package one of the first round picks and one or two of the young defensemen, maybe even package two first round picks, depending on what kind of high level offensive forward might be out there. But they just can't rely on Suzuki, Caulfield, and Slafkovský to be the only guys who can generate any offense. You know, you're the Ullinen this year and Harvey Pinard, and you know, you look at the third and fourth lines and you're like, who's going to score on these lines? You know, there's nobody. You can't have half your forwards, or more than half your forwards, who can't score.
And by all accounts, I mean, while he was on the ice with the team, Alex Newhook was very good. Mm-hmm. And obviously very unfortunate what happened to Kirby Dach at the beginning of the year. He'll be back for out for a vengeance, hopefully next year for the Canadians. But still, those two players aren't bringing you from fifth last in the NHL into a playoff spot.
No, but if Kent Hughes can pick up two more of those type of guys,
exactly,
it's off season. Now you've got, now you've got more than half your forwards who can generate some offense. I mean, Newhook was really good. I mean, when he came back from that high ankle sprain, he played really well, and he looked good at center too. We didn't look good at center earlier in the season. He's a really good little player, and he works his butt off. He's a hardworking guy. He's got some offensive skill. Kirby Dach, hopefully he can stay healthy next year. And this goes back to Chicago, these injury issues. He just can't stay healthy. And is it unlucky? Is he fragile? We'll find out moving forward. But that's what I think when Kenny was saying, I see him making another trade like what he did to get Dach, like what he did to get Newhook at the draft or before the draft. And then the free agents, Jeff Gorton said, you know, they'll look if there's a free agent out there who's available and can help them. They're looking. You know, I don't think they were last season, this season, but they're realizing that, you know, this fans' patience is going to wear out. It started to wear out already for some fans. This offseason is really huge for the Canadiens moving forward this rebuild. They need to do something to at least have a team that's competing to get into the playoffs next year. I don't know if they're going to be good enough to get in next year, but they need to be. I think the fans want to see at least a team that's still got a shot to get in the playoffs a couple of weeks left in the season.
You know what? Obviously, the chips aren't going to fall exactly how they fell this year. But I think what fans would really enjoy, honestly, people covering the team would really enjoy, because it's like the same old story for you guys, you know, they're playing great, but they can't win games. I think fans want them, the Canadiens, to be in that mix of those teams that were kind of all fighting for a playoff spot, but all didn't felt like they, none of them wanted to be in that, wanted to get into the playoffs.
And the Capitals and the Islanders and all those teams. Yeah. That's where this next season that they need to try and be in that mix.
Exactly. Because they were all separated at the end, you know, obviously New Jersey fell off and Pittsburgh, you know, they fell off, but these teams were Buffalo, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Detroit. Those are the four teams that all missed. And obviously Philadelphia over exceeding expectations there. Those are the teams that all missed. But if the Canadiens are in that mix and end up missing, that's success. I mean, we're calling that now with the roster that they have, but in my books, that would be on paper a successful season, because you got to move out of the bottom five
To go from the bottom five to like guaranteed you're going to make the playoffs. It'd be interesting to see. I mean, if they win the draft lottery,
Yep.
That changes things. And if they make a trade and a lot can change. That's what I say. This offseason is going to be so important. Lane Hutson, the little taste we got of him the last two games, he looks really fun. The white fans are coming out of their seats every time he touched the puck, right? And those little moves. And I was talking with Samuel Montembeault and asked him, what impressed him most about Hutson. He said, he didn't play afraid. He had that play where he put the puck through his legs, between his legs, to go around the guy. And as you said, he didn't hesitate to make those moves either. We're talking about Mike Matheson before, how he doesn't hesitate. Lane Hutson, the same thing. He doesn't hesitate. And if I think he's going to start the season next year with the Canadiens, I'd be surprised if he doesn't. And it'll be interesting to see how fans are with him. Are they going to understand? He's going to cough up the puck a lot. He's going to, when he's making those high risk moves, it comes with a cost, right? There's a high risk. And with Mike Matheson, Mike Matheson was asked also, can you have Mike Matheson and Lane Hutson on the same team? And he said, yeah, it's like he's going to make us better. Now it's even more offense going forward. And there's your two point guys for your two power play units are Hutson and Matheson. That's not too bad either. But again, another forward creating offense. They need to get a couple Lane Hutsons to play up front.
Yeah, agreed. Speaking of teams with a couple of those talented players up front, okay, this is something that I feel like we're only going to be able to talk about this week. You're the perfect guest to talk about it with, because we're different generations. This kind of comes up every year in the Twitterverse, in Montreal Twitterdom, we'll call it, because you know, it's always going to be around the same teams facing off in the playoffs. And every year I see a generational split. You know, it's people of my generation. It's no brainer. I want the Bruins to beat the Leafs. You got to cheer for, if you had to cheer for one team in this series, I'm picking the Bruins. But then if I said that to someone in your generation, they go, you're nuts. What is wrong with you? Of course it would be the Leafs. Obviously, the Canadiens fans from both our generations, it's you cheer for one and then you cheer against the other in the next round, obviously. But why is it that mostly of the older Canadiens fans, it's you got to cheer for the Leafs?
I don't know how, but I mean, I'm an older guy and I love, there's more of my friends, I think, are cheering for the Bruins than are cheering for the Leafs. I think there might be some of it, maybe going back to the old hockey in Canada days and the original six Canadian teams. Some people want to see the Canadian teams do well. personally, I'd like to see Boston beat Toronto just because I think I get, you know, we get the media, like the center of the universe, Toronto coverage all the time, right? The Hockey in Canada, it's like a home broadcast for the Leafs. It's not like a national broadcast. And the Leafs just, they puzzle me because they just keep doing the same things over and over and over. You know, they changed yet. Said goaltending's a problem. Defense is a problem. They put all their eggs in one basket with those core four guys. They pay them a ton of money. And in the playoffs, they don't necessarily perform the way they should. Mm-hmm. And they get eliminated. And it's like year after year after year after year. And you're like, how much longer does this go on? Like, how much longer do the Shanna plan until they realize that you're not going to win with those core four? Like, you got to maybe move one and, you know, get whatever you might get, you know, with Austin Matthews. You know, they re-sign him long term. If they had decided to trade Austin Matthews, what would they have got for him? Know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or one of the other, like, they would have got a ton, right? And just like, how many times are you going to go into the battle with the same guys and have the same result until you realize something has to change? And I mean, the series, you know, it's only 2-1 for Boston. A lot can change. I mean, the Leafs come back and win the series, and, you know, eat our words. But it seems so predictable that the Leafs are going to lose in the playoffs. You know, before the series started, I said Boston in six. I just think it's going to be a repeat. The Leafs know how to beat themselves, right? They're just dumb penalties, weak, bad goals. It's almost comical, like year after year. It's the same story. So I don't know how much of a generational thing there really is, but if there is that, I think maybe it's the older generation just because of the original six and, you know, the Bruins rivalry, like every year. You know, when I was younger, the Habs played the Bruins in the playoffs every year. There was a real, you know, hatred between, you know, we were Chris Nyland, you know, fighting in the hallway at Boston Garden with half the Bruins team and all those kind of things. But you're right. I mean, it's two teams that Montrealers normally hate. And this is the one, okay, who do they hate more?
Listen, I grew up, you know, 2010s when I was, you know, the peak of my Habs fandom. I'm growing up. The Habs are playing the Bruins in the playoffs every year. Those were some,
and they beat them every year. It used to be.
Well, that's right. And it was some highly competitive and nasty series. Mm-hmm. You know, with really bad blood in those series. And still, it's Toronto by a mile. You know, it's
the thing. Maybe I'm skewed a bit. Is I'm on the South Shore. I live in Brossard, and we got a lot of friends in Greenfield Park. And there's a lot of Boston Bruin fans in Greenfield Park. Mm. Part of it is Gary Galley, who was from Greenfield Park, who played for the Bruins. A bigger part of it is Bobby Orr. My generation, like, Bobby Orr is my favorite player when I was a kid, and I still think he was the greatest hockey player ever played. But I was a Canadiens fan growing up and a Bobby Orr fan. But I have friends of mine who were Bobby Orr fans, and because of that, became Bruins fans. Mm-hmm. And there's probably quite a few people in my age that's true for. Just say Bobby Orr was so great. It's like, you know, a younger generation, like there'd be a lot of Pittsburgh Penguin fans probably in Montreal.
Because
Sidney Crosby, right? They love Sidney Crosby, or Mario Lemieux, and became a Pittsburgh Penguins fan. We might see a similar thing moving forward with the Blackhawks, with Connor Bedard, right? Some young kids who watch Connor Bedard, and, you know, now they're a Blackhawks fan. So I think that's, you know, I don't know how many Leafs players turned Montrealers into a Leaf fan. You know, what I mean? Like, Daryl Sittler, I don't think, turned a lot of Montrealers into Leaf fans, but I think there really is that Bobby Orr connection, not just in Montreal, but I think, you know, probably across Canada. He was just so great and so fun to watch and such a great player. If you were, you know, if you were 9 or 10 years old, like I was watching him, you know, there's a chance you might have become a Bruins fan.
You know, you mentioned, you don't think there's any Leaf players that could turn a Montreal fan into not necessarily a Toronto fan, but a fan of that player. I think it just goes back to, you know, the type of people Montrealers are. Because sure, we admire the flash and amazing feats on the ice. You know, Guy Lafleur is immortalized here, of course, but there was a blue collar aspect to Guy Lafleur, and I think there's certain rough and toughness that needs to be there with that player for them to really speak to Montrealers. That's why, you know, you see Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner. These are amazing players. William Nylander, amazing players. There's no edge to them.
Yeah.
You see them and they're just, the classic thing you hear, pretty boys. And that does not speak to Montrealers at all.
And Austin Matthews, I mean, the game the other night, I saw him, they were hacking and whacking him, and he doesn't give it back. You know what I mean? He doesn't give, and he's a big guy. You know, you don't need a fighter that, but you whack the guy, whack him back. And, you know, I think back to, especially when you're playing against Brad Marchand. And, you know, I go back, I remember when the Bruins played the Canucks in the cup final, one of the Sedin twins, and Marchand had him and he punched him about six times in the face with his glove, like boom, 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 boom. What are you going to do? 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 What are you, and did nothing. Did nothing. Like, you know, the referee's probably looking at him saying, do something, slash him. I'll give you a free slash. You know, you're going to sit there and take that. And I think that's part of what happens with the Leafs. And I remember talking with an NHL scout a couple of years ago and mentioning the Leafs, and he was saying how the Leafs are a team, especially with Dubas, it's all about analytics. Like, all Dubas wants to know is analytics on guys. And the scout said, well, what analytics shows you when a player gets punched in the mouth in the playoffs and doesn't want to play anymore? Is there an analytics stat for that? And so the Leafs have some guys like that, that they just, when it going gets tough, they don't come through. And see, so there's no analytics stat for that. That's something that's either guys, some guys have it in them and some guys don't. And Marchand, you know, the Leafs coach was whining about Marchand the other night. And Marchand is the best at that. Like, he'll provoke guys and he won't take crap from anybody. And he walks that line. Sometimes he goes over it, but the fact he will go over to Mike Gorbers in the back of guys' heads too, right? I don't think playing against Ryan Reeves, but I mean, you throw him on the ice, you're almost playing shorthanded. But your star players have to have some grit to win in the playoffs. Your star players have to be tough. Like, they really got to be. And again, not fighting, you got to be tough. You got to be willing to give as much as you get. You know, if some guy's going to slash in the back of your legs, you slash him back. If some guy's going to rough you up in a scrum, you rough him out. I think the Leafs just don't have their key player. Your key players are on the ice most of the time, and you got to have some playoff grit to you. And I think the Leafs just don't have it. And that's what I was saying earlier, year after year after year, you watch it and it's the same thing.
You know, I wonder at one point the players looked themselves in the mirror, because, you know, PK Subban was on the Pat McAfee show and his clip kind of went viral. You know, he posted it to his socials. The Pat McAfee show posted it to its socials. And he was talking about, you know, how in game one, the Leafs let Boston just walk all over them. And then game two came, and yeah, the Leafs won, but it was close. It was a little too close for comfort. And he goes, why isn't Austin Matthews just, you know, that Bruins power play is not very good. You know, they might have Pasternak, they might have McAvoy, they might have Marchand, but still, the numbers aren't there. They don't say that it's very good. Take a pound of flesh out of them, you know, just do it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if they give it back, you're going on the power play. You got one of the best power plays in the NHL. Just do something. Subban was, he was losing his mind.
Do something. And PK, remember that series against Boston when PK was incredible? I remember he was getting all those racist taunts from Boston fans and everything. Him and Price were basically carrying the game. Nobody had a bigger target on their back than PK Subban, right? I mean, they were trying to run him through the boards, but he gave it back. Whatever you gave to him, he gave it to you. And say, do something, you know. And I think back when I was talking about the thing with Sedin, the referee's probably been saying, do something. I just gave him five free punches. I didn't call a penalty. Now do something.
And
I was watching the Leafs with Austin Matthews. And I was like, Austin Matthews is 6'4" and 230 pounds or whatever. Give some of it back. Like, it's the way the playoffs are. Referees aren't going to – referees, you know, they let a lot of stuff go. And some teams take advantage of that and some teams don't. And if you don't take advantage of that, like the Leafs don't, you're not going to win in the playoffs. You're just not. You're going to be – get intimidated and they're going to just take advantage of you. They're just – you're going to get taken advantage of physically. And, you know, they thought Ryan Reeves is going to solve the problem. And again, there's not that many fights in the playoffs. And when you put Ryan Reeves out there, he's, you know, dangerous to both teams, right? He's dangerous that he might beat he's dangerous that he might make a bonehead play like he did early in game one and resulted in a goal the other way. So you need, in today's NHL in the playoffs, your best players need to have some grit. We're talking about Nick Suzuki before. Nick Suzuki will give it back if you give it to him. You know, if you give him a whack, he'll whack you right back. Slafkovsky's gotten much better with that. Like, he was now, he's a physical presence out there. So your best players got to have a little grit to them. And the least best players just don't seem to have that grit. And it's the same thing year after year after year in the playoffs.
And, you know, Austin Matthews, I really do believe, you know, if he plays as long as Ovechkin plays, Ovechkin's going to break Gretzky's record. Matthews could do it. Matthews, the next guy. He's so good.
He is incredible. Like, he scores goals in every possible way. I mean, that goal he scored in game two of the sort of football type pass from Domi. I mean, the deke he made was, what a great backhand forehand move. And then the shot, like, he can shoot. He shoots from everywhere, and he can score from everywhere. Like, his release is so quick. He shoots off his wrong foot. He shoots off his right foot. He shoots from impossible angles. He's got such a quick release, and it's an amazing guy. He's an unpredictable goal scorer. Like, Ovechkin, in a lot of ways, is predictable, right? Especially in the past, right? That spot he'd set up. I mean, I don't know how many of his goals he scored from that spot, but it's a lot on that one-timer. But Matthews just scores in so many different ways. I mean, he's just an incredibly gifted goal scorer. But in the playoffs, he's got to get some of that grit. And I don't know if he has it in him. Like, some guys just don't have it in them, right? You know, talking about the Sedin twins back in Vancouver, it wasn't really in them. And I don't know if Austin Matthews is the kind of guy one day is going to realize that he's got to give it back. You got to do something sometimes when the Brad Marchands of the world are doing what they do.
I think he could find it in him. The one guy who, you know, I don't think he has it in him at all, it's Mitch Marner, because, you know, I saw a tweet. It was very funny. They had a name for each of the core four. I only remember two of them. Austin Matthews was Mr. One Game On, One Game Off in the playoffs. And Mitch Marner was Mr. No Games On and One Game Off.
And the front page of the Toronto Sun the other day had Mr. Invisible, right? They had Marner on there with his face, like, you look like an invisible man in a Leafs uniform. And it's again, another incredibly – the playoffs are a different – it's a different sport when you get to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Than a regular season. It really is. It really, really is. And that's why, you know, you go back when the Canadians had that run through the playoffs – 2021, and they went to the final. A big reason of that was, you know, those big four, the four Clydesdales they had on defense, and, you know, Weber and Petrie and those guys, they were just so physical. And Josh Anderson, we were talking earlier about how bad he was to see, he was amazing in that playoff run. I mean, he was a physical presence every time he was on the ice, hitting guys and pounding guys. That fourth line they had with Armia and Perry and guy from Carolina.
Jake Evans?
No, it wasn't Jake Evans. It was... anyway, they were dominant out there, and big and physical.
Eric Stahl, actually. It was Eric Stahl. Producer Shane coming in the clutch Stahl, again.
Correct. And, you know, Chris Nyland was on our Hockey Inside Outro this week. That's Hockey Inside Outro. He has a great line. He was saying the Canadians need more men moving forward, and the Toronto Maple Leafs need more men. You need more guys. So talk with him and Rick Green. They were talking about that 86 team that won the cup, and, you know, you had Ryan Walters, you had guys like that, just, they played tough, they played hard. Mike McPhee, Nyland, you know, Rick Green, they played hard, a man's game, right? And I think Knuckles is right, the Canadians need more men, and the Leafs need more men. They have tons of skill, they need skilled guys who are men. Like, you look at the Tkachuk brothers, right? They're incredibly skilled players, and they play with a grit and an edge that's made for the playoffs, just made for the playoffs. You go back to Mark Messier. You know, I read Mark Messier's book last summer. Just a man, right? Just a physical presence on the ice along with a ton of skill. That's why they won so many Stanley Cups. And for the Leafs, Ryan Reeves isn't the answer for the Leafs getting tougher. They need guys who can play and are tough. Doesn't mean fighting. Just means they're tough. They're hard to play against. They're not fun to play against. They give you a little extra whack here. They give you a punch in the mouth in the scrum. They know how to toe that line. And for the Canes, they need some more guys like that. And the Leafs, the Canes need more guys like that if they want this rebuild to work. And the Leafs need more guys like that if they want to win the playoffs.
You know, if Ryan Reeves is the answer to the question, I don't want to know what the question is. Is the, you know, as the old cliche is. So, you know,
but he's the old school. I mean, how many fights has there been a fight yet in the playoffs this year?
I don't even think so. Even Matt Rempe is in the lineup for New York night in, night out. Yeah. There are no fights.
That's Matt Rempe
against Tom Wilson.
I mean, it used to be the brawls, right? The Easter brawl with the Canadians and Nordiques. It doesn't happen anymore. There's hardly any fights in the NHL playoffs. But it doesn't mean there's not intimidation. It doesn't mean it's not a physical game. It's a much more physical game. But the Ryan Reeves of the world, like, you need to be able to play. You know, that's one thing, with Mike, the Canadians with Michael Pezzetta. One thing I like about Michael Pezzetta, you can put him on the ice. Like, he's on a fourth line. Like, you know, he's not a third line or whatever, but as a fourth liner, he's not going to hurt you. He can skate. He can keep up with the play. He can score if he gets a chance to score. He's not a heavyweight, but if he has to drop the gloves, he'll drop the gloves. And you can play him. Like, if the Canadians are in the playoffs, you could put Pezzetta on the ice. You're not going to play him 15 minutes a game, but you can play him as a fourth liner, is 7-8 minutes, and he's not going to hurt you, right? He knows his role and he plays it well. But I think with Reeves, I think every time you put him on the ice, you're sort of going. I mean, having said that, he hasn't played bad the last couple of games. But when you put him on the ice as a coach, you got to be going, okay, just don't let them skill. Don't get
that's scored. That's it. You're kind of putting him on the ice.
That first goal of the series, which set the tone, that was just him going out of his way to make a dumb hit and taking himself out of position, and the 2-on-1 the other way, and boom, it's 1-0. And that sets it, that can set the tone for a series right off the bat like that, especially if you're the Leafs and you're so used to losing in the playoffs. You're like, oh boy, here we go again. You know, down 1-0.
It's crazy to me to look at this guy's, talking about Ryan Reeves, his ice time. You know, it's just, he played 10 minutes in game 2, 7 minutes in game 3, and he played 7.5 in game 1. You know, it's just, you can't, those days are just so over especially in the playoffs, in the NHL. You need 12 forwards out there who are, like you said about Pezzetta, like, not necessarily a threat every time they're on the ice to score, but just can play the game properly and won't think, oh, I'm going to light this guy up because that's all I know how to do. And then you end up reading the play wrong and puck goes the other way and there goes 2-on-1 and you get scored on. Anyways.
And Pezzetta hits. I mean, Pezzetta was in the top 10 most of the season in hits, even though he didn't get a lot of ice time. But he's, one of the things I like about Pezzetta is he's smart. Like, he doesn't just run at guys to blow them up. He makes it hard
to
play against. He makes the defenseman pay after he gets, just gets the pass off. He hits him. You see him cruising around. He's looking for hits, but he's not going out of his way to do it because he doesn't. That's not all that justifies him being there, right? I think with Ryan Reeves, to try and justify himself, he's got to try and blow somebody up when he's on the ice.
Yeah. It's anyways, so we'll see. You know, like you said, maybe this time next week, you and I look like idiots, or the Leafs have just won 3 straight, and they're in the next round of the playoffs. But
I'm not a betting man, but I wouldn't bet on it because it's because it's so predictable. It's like
the last thing I'll say is just, especially last game, and again, not to be, that guy is just, oh, he's a homer. He's just piling on the Leafs because it's easy. Mm-hmm. You know, when Trent Frederick scored that goal, the squeak through, harmless shot from the point, and it just squeaked through.
Yep.
And again, just no fight from Toronto, nothing. You know, they're complaining to the ref about behind the play, Bertuzzi and Marchand are tied up. And sure, did Marchand give a little more? Okay. Mm-hmm. But, you can't get lost in this
That's what the playoffs are.
It doesn't matter. So, talk
about the fans not being into the game in Toronto either. And I don't know if you've been to a game in Toronto, but it's weird how quiet.
It's been a long time. It's been a long time.
Quiet it is compared to the Bell Center, most of the other arenas. It's like a corporate country club almost. And one of the Leafs announcers was saying that, like, the Leafs weren't getting any momentum from their fans at home. They're too quiet. Like, they're waiting for something to happen instead of encouraging the Leafs to make something happen. That's another common theme in Toronto. And I saw someone on Twitter saying that he has season tickets for the Leafs, but he couldn't afford the playoff season tickets. Just the prices were so crazy. It's become the Toronto. It's like a corporate country club, that rink, and it is. I'd heard about it for so long, how quiet it is. And the first time I went and covered a game there, I was like, it's really quiet in here. No score. he was a Brewer, but like there's no, you know, at the Bell Center, you get the Go Habs Go chant going,
or yeah,
fans are into the game most of the game. It's really weird in Toronto how it's opposite to that.
Toronto, you wish, even though you listen, you may have a better hockey team than Montreal, you still wish you were us. You still wish you were us. Okay, before we get out of here, bigger shock of the playoffs so far. Dallas being considered cup favorites at one by some, you know, a popular pick to win the cup, down 2-0 to Vegas, or Tampa Bay down 3-0 to Florida.
I guess Tampa Bay down 3-0 to Florida, because Tampa Bay is a team that knows how to win in the playoffs. They're getting older, but they got a bunch of guys who have been there, done that, and to me, that's more of a surprise. But, you know, every year in the playoffs, well, one of the things that makes the NHL playoffs so great is the upsets. It's sort of like NCAA March Madness and all the upsets. And in the NHL playoffs, too, you usually get at least one big upset in the first round. But for Tampa Bay, I'm surprised to see them down 3-0. I would not have predicted that to happen with that team, just because the veterans they have, the coach they have, how they've been there, done that before. So I'm surprised.
You know, you talk about, you know, just they have a guy who I don't, did he end up winning the Art Ross Kucherov, or
yes,
was
did,
it, yeah. There you go. You know, yeah, they have a player who got, you know, 145 points, if not mm-hmm. more. And just, you don't want to say invisible, because you gotta pay attention when he's on the ice.
Yeah.
But man, by his standards, pretty invisible.
Yeah, but you know, we were talking before about, you know, the Leafs not being built for the playoffs. The Panthers are, like, that's
oh,
a team.
Yeah. Oh,
when
my
they
God.
Came in, the Canadiens beat the Panthers near the end of the season. I think it was 5-1 or something like that. They beat them at the Bell Center.
Yeah,
and I remember one of my buddies saying to me, "Oh, there's no way the Panthers are winning the Stanley Cup. Look what happened." And I said, "Oh, they're the Panthers. Don't bet against the Panthers. They are built for the playoffs. They're built for the playoffs. Great goaltending." Kachuk, they got grit. They're hard to play against. They finish checks. They're a great mix of – their skilled guys play tough. Their skilled players are tough players. Barkov, he's a physical presence out there. He's not doesn't fight, but he finishes checks. And Kachuk, you know, it's Kachuk, and they're a team that's built for the playoffs. So saying that, like, is it surprising? But it's still surprising that they're up 3-0 on Tampa.
Yes,
I never would have predicted. I bet I picked Florida to win the series, but I would never have picked them to be on the verge of sweeping it.
Well, that's it. And you know, there was a point where it was before Tampa won those cups. They still had Kucherov. They still had Stamkos. Not sure if they had Point yet, because he's a bit younger.
Yeah.
But remember when they lost in 4 straight to Columbus the year before that? I think they made it to maybe a couple years before that. They made it to the cup final. They ended up losing to Chicago. Like, they were always in the mix, and no one ever thought they would get over the hump. Then they got over the hump.
Mm-hmm.
Made 3 straight Stanley Cup finals, 2 straight Stanley Cups. This is, you know, should they get eliminated? I think this is it for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Can you call them a dynasty? I think we could call them the dynasty.
Yeah, in the salary cap NHL, it'll be interesting moving forward what changes. Like, Stamkos is a free agent this summer. Mm-hmm. I don't see them re-signing him unless it was like a real, you know, hometown discount. They were talking about the Leafs. You know, at a certain point, you need to make changes.
Yeah.
And at this point with the Lightning, it's a time they need to start making some changes, and we'll see what they do during the off season. But they're a group that has, you know, for salary cap team, salary cap world, they've had a really impressive run for quite a few years in a row. And similar like the Bruins, we're talking about the Bruins, and, you know, they lost Krejci and they lost Bergeron. It's like, it didn't matter.
Insane.
You know, I'm hearing in Hockey in Canada, they're making excuses. You know, it's, oh, this guy's hurt, and, you know, this guy's this, and Marner had a high ankle sprain. And it's, the Bruins lost 2 of their best players. You know, they just keep going. They have that culture, that winning culture that they've developed in Boston. And same thing in Tampa. They developed a real winning culture in Tampa. And that's what the Canadians are trying to do now. And Marty St. Louis has spoken about it often. He wants to create that winning culture. And he mentioned those two teams. He mentions Tampa. He mentions Boston. That's what they want to have here. They want to have that winning culture moving forward. And in Toronto, they've never been able to develop that winning culture. And that's one of their big problems.
You know, it's funny because I was even looking through the years and Boston, every team bottoms out at some point. But Boston, for the most part, pretty steadily good for a very, very sustained long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, they'll miss the playoffs here and there, but never really bottomed out in the NHL for a consistent amount of years. And that is that's impressive. That's really, really impressive. For it to never happen or very seldom happen, insane.
They have a culture and they draft and acquire players that fit into that culture. And that's what the Canadians are trying to do now too, right? The Canadians are trying to do that. The players they sign, the player they draft, as Marty St. Louis says, they want everyday people. They want good guys. They want good people in the room that play a hard brand. And that's what the Bruins do. And a good friend of one of my best friends is a big Bruins fan. And after the game, he was talking about Domi had a really good game. And he said, man, Domi would be a good Bruin. And he would. Domi would fit. You know, he's with the Leafs and because his dad was there and everything. But he's more of a Bruin. Like, he plays a Bruin style. Yeah. He's in your face. He's hard to play against. Can be a pain in the butt. And that's the guys you want in the playoffs. And the Leafs just don't have enough of those guys.
Well, this time next week, you'll be talking with Tony. And yeah, we'll see if we'll see if you and I look like fools this time next week. Until then, Stu, enjoy the rest of your enjoy your weekend and enjoy the hockey.
Okay, you too. Thanks.
That is Stu Cowan. I'm Matt O'Han. I am in Nashville next weekend. Tony will be taking my place. Shout out producer Shane. Thank you very much. We'll see you. We'll see you next time.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group, driven to be different. La Vida TV, embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination.